The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 98 of the Canes Cast, and you know what?
What's that?
This has not been a slow offseason.
It certainly hasn't. Lots of news in the last week since we last spoke with you on episode 97 of Canes Cast. Thank you all for tuning in each and every week. Coming to you on Tuesday this week.
Yep.
TV's Mike Maniscalco was gallivanting about Dallas.
Yes, I was.
How was it?
It was outstanding. We'll get to that at the end of the podcast. Let's not lose strength and conditioning coach Bill Berniston right off the hop.
I didn't know if we wanted to tease the hockey stuff and jump into the weekend adventures.
No, the weekend of adventures will be at the end of this.
Okay.
Because next week we'll be coming to you again on Tuesday because I'm taking yet another long weekend.
Mm.
That's how I do vacation.
I sense a pattern.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Kind of saves up the vacation days because we don't get charged for the weekend days.
Yes.
During the summertime.
Yeah.
If it was a regular season, we would. So I'm trying to...
Always on during the regular season.
Exactly. Trying to maximize the vacation potential. And the Carolina Hurricanes are maximizing their roster, Michael Smith of the Web. You've been very busy typing articles about players who are going to be putting on the Canes uniform for the first time ever this offseason, or about players who are re-signing with the Carolina Hurricanes. And let's just go back to last week, the big signing. The Hurricanes inked Ryan Dzingel to a 2-year deal. He, formerly of the Columbus Blue Jackets and Ottawa Senators last year, 26 goals last season. I love this signing. I've kind of, when we were being asked this question during the offseason, like who would you sign or who would you target, he's one of those guys I look at that you can play him at center. He can take faceoffs. Maybe not the greatest at it for faceoffs, but he can do that on the line. You can put him anywhere. He can play left, right, or center up front. And I think this is a guy who brings, what did the Canes say all last year that they needed, especially early on? Well, we got to find some offense. We need to find more goals. Ryan Dzingel is going to find more goals for the Carolina Hurricanes because this is all of a sudden a pretty deep team going three lines right now for Rod Brind'Amour, especially when you consider you have Sebastian Aho, Jordan Staal, and now Eric Halla in the middle and a bunch of talented wingers that you can put on either side of them.
Yeah, Dzingel has a career 15% shooting percentage, which is kind of exactly what the Hurricanes are looking for, is some finish in their lineup.
Well, and they've got a lot of finish in their lineup.
They do have a lot of finish, but not enough finish.
Ooh.
Which they then added.
One end versus two.
Correct, with Ryan Dzingel. He's a guy who's quick, who's skilled, and when you talk about what a Carolina Hurricane is today, I think he fits perfectly.
Yep.
what Rod Brind'Amour is looking for. Somebody who's quick, who's skilled, who can create scoring chances by using his speed and skill. That's what Ryan Dzingel does. He's crossed the 20-goal plateau twice, which is excellent for a young player in this league. And he's only improved. In each of his three full seasons, he's only improved his point totals, which is very encouraging for the Hurricanes. And like you said, suddenly they've started to, when you compare the lineup from Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Final to the lineup that we're seeing now, they've steadily improved and added pieces to really strengthen perhaps some weaknesses that they had then. Dzingel is an option two on the power play. Maybe he factors in there and can help the Hurricanes convert on the power play more regularly. And like you said, a very versatile guy who I would assume he starts on the wing, given that the Hurricanes do have Aho, Staal, Halla, Wallmark down the middle. But he can play the left side. He'd be a perfect complement alongside either Jordan Staal or Eric Halla, I think. And by all accounts, he's very excited to get here to Raleigh and get going with the Hurricanes. Maybe a trade deadline acquisition for Columbus that didn't work out. They acquired nearly the entire league. And Dzingel maybe just didn't find his footing there. And I think it's sort of hard to find. With John Tortorella, you're either in or you're not. And I'm not sure it really worked out for him there. But a very, I think, savvy signing by the Hurricanes to pick him up. There's value to be had after July 1st. And we've talked about this before. how sometimes it pays to wait until the market settles a bit. And I think maybe the Marcus Johansson signing sort of set that bar.
Yeah.
And the Hurricanes were able to swoop in and sign Dzingel there a couple weeks after July 1st. I think he's going to be a good fit, and I look forward to getting him here to Raleigh and really seeing what he can add on the ice for the Hurricanes.
Well, the other thing, and we heard his phone press conference that he had with mm-hmm. the media, that he was excited about what this playoff run did for the organization and for the city. So, folks, people out there take notice. They took notice of the playoff run and how electric PNC Arena was
yeah.
for April, May, and, you know, hopefully in the future, June. You know, that was something that was important and how this area rallied around it. And that's something that does need to continue. And, yes, the play on the ice feeds the fans in the stands, and then you can go vice versa. But if that's the atmosphere that players play in front of, they want that. They kind of crave that, especially in places, and this is going to sound weird, and I'm not trying to take a shot, but in places that aren't Toronto or Montreal or Boston, where they know that atmosphere is there from the crowd, but they also know if they go three games without scoring a goal, they're going to get ripped and demanded to be traded in the press and on every kind of media outlet that's available for them. So to come to a place like this where there's nothing but great things, he's starting a family, right?
Yeah.
So he's excited about moving here to Raleigh and, you know, getting his family going. He's getting engaged. He's mm-hmm. Got a fiance. So this is a great spot for him. And again, he checks off for me all the boxes of what you said, of what the Canes want to be the players they're looking for. Not overly physical, but he can be physical. He can get there.
Yeah.
Just ask Zdeno Chara about the hit that Dzingel laid on him in the playoffs. So again, he's one of those guys who I can't sit there, although the 15% shooting percentage is great,
mm-hmm.
and go, well, that's an A-plus here or an A-plus there. But he's one of those guys who does everything well.
Yeah.
And that's why I love players like that. Give me versatile players that you can plug in. He can jump up and play top minutes if you need him to. He's probably going to be really suited for that, you know, second, third line, those minutes. When you say top nine, so between 4 and 9 in there, and he just makes your team deeper, and it slots other players in the right spot too. And this is a great signing for the Canes, and he's by all accounts a great human being off of the ice. So this is a major signing for Carolina when we all thought, well, they're done. They're just waiting to hear on a couple of names
yeah.
to see who will come back.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said last week that if the Hurricanes were to pursue some scoring punch help, they'd do it through a trade. Obviously, I was very wrong. This is the type of player I think that they're looking to add, somebody who can provide that scoring punch. He's somebody who can create offense out of virtually nothing. He can create that transitional offense that the Hurricanes maybe didn't exactly have at all points last season. He's extremely excited to get going and begin this new chapter in his career. And we actually hope to have him on the podcast next week. So a little tease
Good
for
tease.
Episode 99
well done.
Of CanesCast. He'll be wearing number 18, by the way, if you want to customize your Dzingel Hurricanes jersey. I guess fans will get their first look at him on the ice come September in training camp. And it'll be interesting to see where head coach Rod Brind'Amour kind of figures him to slot in. Dzingel was asked on his conference call last week about the role he might have on this team. And I think he said something that Rod Brind'Amour will certainly appreciate, and that's that he's going to have to earn his role. There's not really a role set out and earmarked for him. He's going to have to earn it, and he's no stranger to that because his first draft-eligible year, he passed through the draft, was not drafted. The next year, had to wait until the early 200s, I believe it was 204th overall, in the 7th round. Ottawa took a flyer on him. After 3 seasons at Ohio State, he turns pro and works his way up from Binghamton to Ottawa. And so at every step of the way, really, throughout his career, he's had to prove himself
yep.
and earn his keep. And that's exactly what Rod Brind'Amour preaches with the Hurricanes and his mantra of earning it, earning ice time, earning your role. I think he's going to fit in very well to this group, and especially under Rod Brind'Amour, who he said everybody he's talked to, he's heard nothing but good things about. And that's part of, too, what changed, I think, the perception of this team and this market. The playoff run, the success this team had, but it's important to consider too that I don't think, without Rod Brind'Amour, I don't think this team has the success they had last season. So Rod Brind'Amour is a huge part, a huge selling point, I think, for the Hurricanes in their pitches to free agents.
Yeah, you know, when I've been asked, what was the biggest difference for the Carolina Hurricanes this past year? Rod Brind'Amour is the first name that I say.
Yep.
He's the first thing that I bring up. He was the difference. And by the way, this is, for me, a really good deal for the Carolina Hurricanes to get that much production from a player this late in free agency, and you get him for less than $3.5 million for the cap hit each year at under $3.5 million. You still have a bunch of room to play with, a couple of guys that you still need to sign in the future, but not a ton of guys that you're looking at in the future that are going to break the bank for this team. And, you know, for me, this is just one of those. We saw it last year, the Calvin DeHaan signing late in, as far as free agency goes. It wasn't exactly, you know, July 1st or July 2nd. It's a couple of days after. Well, this is a bunch of days after, and the Carolina Hurricanes get a guy who is going to fit in right away. And now where does he slot? It depends on who you talk to, but I think Michael and I have just kind of covered where he'll be. He's going to be in, he's in that top nine definitely.
Yeah.
The question is he going to play next to Eric Halla, or is he going to play next to, is he going to play next to Jordan Staal?
Yeah.
Those are the questions of where he fits in from here.
The going back to Calvin DeHaan too, and yeah, that trade that was made with Chicago, sending Calvin DeHaan there, bringing Gustav Forsling, Anton Forsberg back to Carolina, that cap space that the Hurricanes cleared by trading DeHaan kind of opened up the door for them to sign DeZingle. Without that move, this is a team that has just about $7 million in cap space left right now. If they don't move DeHaan, they're firmly pressed up against the cap too when you consider Justin Williams is still not yet signed, Brock McGinn not yet signed. So
going to arbitration.
Yeah, Saku Manilainen. So a couple of pieces still to be figured out. But that move kind of gave them the freedom to then go out and get a guy like DeZingle. So kind of a savvy move by the front office, because you figure, you know, Calvin DeHaan played on the third pair and he's making $4-4.5 million. But then they go and sign Ryan DeZingle, who figures to be a second, third line, maybe even first line, you know, if he's feeling it offensively, player for less than $3.5 million a year. So some good management in terms of cap space by the Hurricanes to free up some room with that Calvin DeHaan trade, knowing that the depth on defense is there, and then acquiring some scoring help, which the team needed at times last season in DeZingle.
By the way, for the Carolina Hurricanes right now, the projected and current cap space for the upcoming season, according to Cap Friendly, is $4.5 million. So that's how much they have. And as Michael just put out, there are three names that are there. So maybe the Canes aren't done. Maybe there's still some moves to be made, some things that they're going to do. And, you know, a couple of players have decisions that they have to make on where they're going to be and how that carves into the Carolina Hurricanes cap space moving forward. Speaking of Ryan DeZingle, though, I do have a good story about flying to Dallas. So I'm on the plane, and I am what I am. My size is what it is, so there's really not a lot of hiding for me. And, you know, for the most part, people are really great. They don't, you know, get you into the, hey, what do you think about this or all that. And I'm sitting in my seat, and a very nice woman walks by me and leans over and goes, "Go Canes." And I went, "Yeah." I go, "It's been great." I go, "Gonna like them even more after the signing today of what they made." And she goes, "I know. How do you say his name? I just want to be sure." I go, "It's DeZingle." And she said, "I think we're going to like this guy." I'm like, "You're really going to like this guy." So that's something where I can tell you, last year I was getting on a plane and people weren't excited about, you know, what the Hurricanes were doing as far as signing players or what was going on. So it was just nice. It was nice to be a part of it. So small little story there. There's a little sprinkle for more of what's to come.
The D is not silent.
No, it is not. Well done. Thank you.
Worth noting.
Also, the Hurricanes, a couple other signings today. Hayden Fleury signs a one-year deal. I think we all kind of knew that Hayden Fleury was going to be coming back to the Carolina Hurricanes as a restricted free agent, but it's a one-way deal, paying him $850,000. And also, Gustav Forsling gets a two-way deal that'll pay him about 875K at the NHL level and about 70,000 down in the AHL if he's playing for Charlotte. But again, that's just depth on the blue line. And this is, I think, a big year for Hayden Fleury, because not that this spot is being handed to him, but with Calvin DeHaan being moved on to Chicago, that the Web's Michael Smith already talked about and wisely told you, that maybe that freed up some cap room to make the moves that we're seeing the Canes make right now. This is the opportunity for Hayden Fleury to prove he's an everyday NHL defenseman.
Yeah, it's a silver platter opportunity, really. It's the year where Hayden Fleury now requires waivers to go to Charlotte. I'm not convinced he would make it through waivers if he were to be placed on there to be assigned to Charlotte. So it's a one-way contract, and it's his opportunity, a guy who was picked seventh overall,
yep,
to really cement himself as a full-time NHL player. It's a big season for him because he's taken sort of incremental steps in his first 3 years as a professional, both in the AHL and the NHL. I thought in the Calder Cup playoffs, you could tell a noticeable difference,
yep,
between him and others who haven't quite yet had that NHL experience, but now it's his chance. It's really his spot to lose, I would say. It's his opportunity to come in and really grab it and solidify himself as a viable NHL defenseman. And when the Hurricanes traded Calvin DeHaan, they clearly have faith in their depth, whether it's him, whether it's Gustav Forsling, whether it's Jake Bean. They have faith that they have the depth there on the blue line that they'll be able to fill that hole left by DeHaan.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Jake Bean's name too, because yes, this is the silver platter opportunity for Hayden Fleury, but I don't think in any way it's handed to him and the team's already resigned to, all right, these are the six defenders we're going to go to. I think there is competition. I think that Gustav Forsling's going to have a shot at this. I think that you look at the guy who they brought in from Finland, I'm not sure that he's going to crack the roster, but you got Alex Lintuniemi who comes in. Perhaps he impresses everybody at camp.
Mm.
And we saw last year that if you impress at camp and in the preseason, they'll find a way to keep you here. Or they'll take notice of it, and when an opportunity arises, they'll get you here. You know, that's something that you can take a look at and point to how Warren Fogle made the team last year and how Saku Menelinen got an opportunity to come back and play and Clark Bishop got an opportunity to come and play for the Carolina Hurricanes. So
yep,
it's just one of these things where it's Fleury's spot to lose,
mm-hmm,
but there are guys who can go take it from him. And
yeah,
the team will be watching to see how those guys play. And we could rank them and say, well, Jake Bean probably is number one on that list of who they'd see or who they could envision being the guy, where they want to see be the guy take that spot because of the offensive potential that he has. Maybe it's somebody who's not even on the roster yet.
Yeah.
You know, because you also know what happens. You get closer to camp. Some guys get waived. Some guys get cut. And maybe they're a better fit here.
PTOs are signed.
Or remember last year, two goalies get waived, and the Canes are the beneficiaries of it.
Yeah.
And that's how they get Curtis McElhinney, because some teams get crowded at spots and they have to move guys or they have to waive guys and make room for other players. And you can only have 50 players under contract. So
yeah, and if Trevor Van Riemsdyk, if his shoulder isn't quite right, you know, by training camp,
that
or by
opens
the start
up
of the
even
season,
more room for guys.
Right. So there's going to be a lot of competition at camp. The Dzingel signing adds some competition up front, because then you look at guys like Brock McGinn, Saku Menelinen, both players who still aren't yet re-signed. They're,
yep,
restricted free agents, and Brock McGinn has got his arbitration hearing on Saturday, I believe it is, the 20th of July.
Yeah, July 20th.
Those guys now, you factor in, they're going to have to compete and scratch and claw and fight for their roster spot. So it's filling up. The Canes roster is filling out, and there are some names that, you know, maybe were,
yeah,
up a bit on the depth chart who have now slid down a bit because of the talent and the skill that the Hurricanes have added.
And one thing about NHL arbitration, just because Brock McGinn and the Canes go to arbitration, it doesn't necessarily mean that Brock McGinn is going to get a contract from the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
I think I want to make sure, and I'm going to look up the exact number. If it's anything over $3.5 million, you're guaranteed you're on the roster. But if it's anything less,
well, no, the team can walk away from it.
If it's anything above $3.5 million,
mm-hmm,
so that's it. So the team can walk away.
The Hurricanes don't really have $3.5 million in cap space to spend on Brock McGinn.
No. Not at this point.
I have to imagine the arbitrator isn't going to rule at a figure that high. But it will be interesting to see how that process plays out. But he's a guy who, you know, now still remaining unsigned, his future is suddenly a little bit unclear just because of the players that the Hurricanes have added. Now, the last time we talked to Don Waddell, and he said, you know, he felt like a contract would get done, whether it was through negotiations before arbitration or through arbitration, he felt like a contract would get done. But, you know, it complicates things now, because now you have to go have a third party, an outside third party, settle this. And the Hurricanes are obviously going to try to get a deal that works out best for them in terms of money. Brock McGinn and his camp are going to try to get the best deal that works out for them in money. But it's all up to the third party arbitrator as to what that ruling is that's going to decide his monetary future here with the Carolina Hurricanes. It'll be interesting to see how that process plays out, because the signings this offseason have certainly, I think, knocked him and Sakko Mantalainen down a few pegs on the depth chart. And now it's a question of where, or maybe even if, do they slot into the Hurricanes roster come opening night?
Yeah, I mean, these are questions that are going to be answered for Brock McGinn probably sooner rather than later. And there's a few other questions about the roster that are going to be answered sooner rather than later. I know that every time that I ask this,
if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
It's usually later for you to come up with a topic.
Yeah.
You don't have one, do you?
Correct.
I was on vacation and I have one.
Well, it's your job to have one and mine to not.
Okay.
That's
did not know that about the Canes cast. That's buried in arbitration, things
yes.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
So
it's deep in your contract.
All right. Well, I'll go look that. I'll have my people go look that up. So you don't even have, like, the people haven't even provided you one?
Oh, no, I think they have. Yeah. I think they have provided me one.
See, look, now he's turning his back on you, people.
No, I know. I know I saw one yesterday.
Yeah, there's more than one. I saw, like, four for you.
Perfect.
There. All right. Well, while you're waiting for that, I will throw this one at you. And if you're ready.
I am ready.
Okay. Now, this has to deal with what we're looking at for the upcoming season, but a lot of talk about goaltending. The Carolina Hurricanes in the regular season will only use two goaltenders all year long.
I'm going to send it back.
Particular reason why?
I think odds are that one of the two gets injured are they're out there.
Okay.
Mrazek battled through a couple of lower body injuries last year. James Reimer is a veteran. I'll say Alex Nedeljkovic gets into the mix next year.
All right.
He might even win the backup job. Who knows, come training camp. But I think the Hurricanes, I think you're going to see him use at least three goaltenders next season. So I'll send it back.
All right. Fair enough.
Perfect. This one from Liam Dow. If you like it, take it. If not, send it back. The Canes will have six or more players that score 20 goals, with two or more of those players hitting the 30-goal mark.
I'm going to send it back. The 30-goal mark is the one that I'm sending back.
There are a lot of conditions to that. So yeah. The Hurricanes had, quick glance, five players. I guess if you count Nino Niederreiter, who scored 14 with the Hurricanes, but his tallies with Minnesota put him over that 20-goal mark. So they had five players over 20 last year. Sebastian Aho hit 30. Yeah, the 30 one is
the two 30s are what I'm sending back. I think I'll take the six 20s.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, there's still one player in Justin Williams who we're waiting to find out what his future is going to be. But right now I could see Sebastian Aho, Teuvo Teravainen, and Andrei Svechnikov, Nino Niederreiter, Ryan DeZingle. I'm going to put a healthy Jordan Staal in that mix.
Mm, yeah.
Is 20 goals. Now, Justin Williams in that mix, I'll pencil him in for 20 goals. And then that's going to take goals away from somebody else on that top line. Eric Halla is an interesting guy for me, too.
Yep.
I mean, it could be seven guys that we're talking about with 20 goals, but 30 goals is becoming a harder and harder plateau to reach. Yeah, you got to be really wide open.
I could see Sebastian Aho getting there again, but it's that.
Oh, there's a 30 goal guy. I just don't know if there's
that second player who's tough. Maybe it's Nino Niederreiter. Maybe it's Eric Halla if he had a year like he did a couple years ago in Vegas.
I think eventually Andrei Svechnikov will be there, but not this year.
Yeah, I think
he's going to go above 20.
Mm-hmm.
And if he gets more power play time, does that open up more goals for him? But remember, if we're talking about another guy getting more goals, that might be taking goals away from somebody else. So that's why it becomes a little bit difficult. I want to take half of it, but I'm not taking the whole thing, so I guess I got to send it back.
Yeah, I agree.
Thanks, Liam.
Here's another one from Matthew Herman. If you like it, you can take it. If not, send it back. Fighting in the NHL should be changed to a match penalty. If there is a clear instigator, the ref may award only one match penalty in that case. However, if it appears to be a gentleman's agreement, then the two will be awarded. Which I believe is already a rule maybe in one of the minor leagues. USHL maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Could be wrong.
I send it back.
Yeah, I'll send it back too.
Yeah.
I think you're already seeing fighting. You're already seeing the game kind of police itself in terms of a decrease in fighting.
Yep.
I don't think you need to take a further step and make it a match penalty and police it further. Well,
and the reason why, you can use it as a weapon. So first period, somebody's playing the Carolina Hurricanes, and you can tell guys to walk away from a fight. But if a guy goes after you, and I know that's what he's talking about, where there's a clear instigator in the fight, but if there's this thought of, well, if we drop the gloves – if you keep sticking a guy and sticking a guy and sticking a guy, and then he turns around and punches you. So now, say Sebastian Aho does that, who's a competitor, or Nino Niederreiter does that, or Andrei Svechnikov. They're going to get a match penalty too? No, I don't like that at all. Keep it at 5 minutes. If anything, because I've got a proposed, some rule changes to get into.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I just keep it the same.
Yeah.
There's something that I want to change with fighting.
Okay.
As far as the rules go. But no, I'm sending that all the way back. I won't even open up the box.
And just, yeah.
No, this is to the wrong house. Go back.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So that's it. As far as like it, keep it goes.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing else?
Nothing else.
All right. Good. Good. I'm glad that the people are not placating you all that much. So
one more week.
Twice. Two people twice. This week. They keep doing it. For whatever reason, and I'm trying to tell them not to, because
they're getting involved in the show. They're
really
actively participating.
They're always actively participating just by listening, which, by the way, again, you can rate us on iTunes and on Google Play.
Just iTunes. Yeah.
Five
or
stars.
Apple Podcasts, whatever it's
called. Yeah, whatever. Well, it's not changed yet, has it?
I think it's Apple Podcasts now.
All right, whatever.
They always change. And I know a number of you are asking if we're going to get on Spotify. We are hoping to be on Spotify soon, within the next, I would say, month or so. So stay tuned on that.
As soon as the Web's Michael Smith clears up the video portion of the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which will be on YouTube every week.
Yeah. You're getting our best people on that one?
Yes.
All right. Good to know. So it's all set. All right. I got a couple of rule changes for you, though. So that's a good way to come in after that. If you like it, keep it. For me, I'm going to put this just out there, and as far as the fighting rules go, we had a guy say, kick guys out. I'm going the other way. How about eliminate the instigator rule? I hate that rule. I hate it because this is a league that doesn't fight as much as it used to. If anything, it fights probably 75% less than what it ever used to. You don't have the staged fights. You don't have the goon fights. And when I see, for me, a player get cross-checked in the back and he can't defend himself and a teammate goes to bail him out, that teammate should not be given any extra penalty because he's trying to defend a teammate when you talk about the instigator rule. Or at least be smarter when you're handing it out. And that's something else that drives me nuts because so many calls in this league now are arbitrarily handed out. Oh, well, that's a trip and a dive. Well, no, if you dive, it's not a trip, right? It's one or the other. That's how I've always looked at it. In this situation, eliminate the instigator rule. I hate it. I don't think there are enough guys who fight, and that's their only means of being in this league anymore, so you can get rid of it. If both guys are willing participants to fight, 5 minutes for both of them, let's go.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't have stats in front of me. Do you think, playing devil's advocate, that the instigator has helped cut down on fighting numbers?
Yeah, I do. I believe it did because I think it eliminated that kind of player.
Gotcha. But now there's no need for it because a player has to be so versatile in order to be on an NHL roster.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and forth, if you watch, and I'll use America's sweetheart, Brad Marchand. If you watch him play, he does things during the course of the game where somebody wants to hit him. So when that guy then drops his glove and hits Brad Marchand and he doesn't do anything, or if he does fight back, the guy who dropped the gloves first and challenged him to the fight, that's the instigator. Even though Marchand's run around the rink all night long, you know, taking a liberty here and there. No, that's why I hate this rule. That's why I hate it.
Yeah.
And guys, what I think if you eliminate it now, the course of where the game has gotten, Michael, is you'll start to eliminate a lot of that dirtier stuff that you see guys do behind the play if they know that, oh, I'm gonna have to answer for this and it's not gonna give my team a power play. That's why. I've put some logic and thought to it, and I get the whole fighting's barbaric, you don't want it, and I'm not advocating fighting in the NHL. Because if you watch, hardly happens now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it used to be an every game occurrence in the league. It was every game there was a fight. I mean, it was the rare instance you went to a game and there wasn't one. Now it's, we see a fight, what, one every 5-8 games, maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say once a month, maybe.
Yeah.
Should be once every 10 to 15.
Yeah. So I just think you can eliminate it now because I see a lot of guys who take liberties the other way and can get away with it because they know that if somebody goes after them, that's going to create a power play for their team. Mm. So you can run around and do those things that aggravate a fan base in a team. That's all.
Yeah. It's an interesting perspective. It'd be interesting, too, to see if that happened, what happened to the fighting numbers.
Well, take it out for a year and see if fights go back up.
Mm-hmm.
And if fights go back up, I'll use the Peter Venkman line from Ghostbusters. Then I'm wrong.
Yeah.
We'll go to jail happily. Right. You know, you put it back in, and that's it. But you can take it away now if you want to.
Right.
And I think it wouldn't change the game down the path that it is because these guys also aren't coming up fighting anymore. Like,
yeah.
Guys used to, one of the ways to get noticed in the NHL by scouts was, oh, this guy would fight.
Right.
Oh, and he can score some, and he can score some goals. So that's going to get him to the path quicker than the guy who, well, he's good in the corners. He scores 10 goals, but the guy who scores 10 goals, you know, beat the hell out of the other team the other night. So we'll call him up. So that's it. It's a different game. Times have changed.
Games changed. Do you have any other proposed rule changes?
I do.
We've got some fan submitted ones too after.
Yeah. Hits to the head, and this one might be, and I know I'm going down a weird road on this one. Some people might not be a fan of this, and I was hesitant to it. But hits to the head are automatically reviewed.
Yeah.
Automatically reviewed.
Yeah.
If a player gets hit to the head, that's like we're talking about all these things that you're looking for. Automatic review for a hit to the head.
At the whistle stop, I assume?
Well, if a player's hit in the head and he's on the ground, there's a whistle.
Right.
So you automatically review that hit. Because there are people
by
in Toronto.
Supplemental discipline or
no, immediately,
review?
Like immediately. Right there.
Gotcha.
I have been in the situation room in Toronto. They're watching every game.
Yeah.
There are players who know that they're being watched every shift. So they know it's out there. And there are people who are assigned in that situation room. There are people who are assigned to watch every game. So there is this thing where, you know, when you say Big Brother's watching, they could buzz in and say, hey, we saw something. Here's what's going on from Toronto. We saw it in the Sharks Vegas Golden Knights playoff series,
right,
where a call was incorrect. We saw it in the Carolina Hurricanes playoff series. If you want to ask somebody about how they feel about what hits to the head are all about, go ahead and ask newly minted Vancouver Canuck Michael Ferland
mm-hmm.
about that, or Rod Brindamore. And this is kind of Rod Brindamore's idea too. You're going to look at goals, hits to the head, A, if players know, and that's where you want a match penalty to come into play, you're watching, it's a hit to the head, you're gone.
Yeah.
That's it, and it's reviewed, and it's set right there because the game is fast for the guys who are reviewing it, and you can be in the wrong angle as a referee and not see where the contact was made or think it's a hit to the head. See, and that's the other side of it too, Michael. I don't know if you watch it. I get more upset when the call is wrong, when it's not a hit to the head and they're calling it that, as opposed to Well, it was a hit to the head, but was there intent behind it? And they let those calls go. The one where you miss a guy, but I'm calling it because I think I saw that. You can't call something that you think you saw. You have to call what you saw.
I think Rod Brindamore's proposal of taking one of the linesmen and one of the referees off the ice is an interesting one. He proposed that keeping one official, one linesman on the ice, taking another two and putting them just off the ice. So whether that's in the penalty box area or somewhere else, it frees up some room on the ice a little more. It gives those guys a little bit of a different vantage point in terms of being able to make calls and watch plays develop. It's an interesting proposal that he sort of expounded on. I think that was during the Stanley Cup playoffs. He was asked about hits to the head and calls and missed calls and that. And that's what he discussed. It'd be interesting to pick his brain a little more on that, because it's one of those changes that that maybe hasn't been discussed enough, in taking a couple of the stripes off the ice and just moving them to a different location.
Yeah, as the game has gotten bigger and faster, there's a lot less room out there. I can live with you can take the other official off the ice.
Because then they can totally focus on watching the play and not have to worry about getting out of the way of the play or trying to figure out where they should be on the ice. They can just be where they're assigned and take in the play from that vantage point. It's an interesting proposal.
Would you do that? You think there'd be more room? Do you think the game would be called the same, better or worse, if you took two of the zebras off the ice?
I would like to see it play out in like a preseason or something, just to see. I don't know if it would affect gameplay as much, because I think I don't know if there's I don't know if that extra room that's created is going to change what teams do on the ice all that much.
I'll tell you what, there will be a lot of pucks that get out of zones or getting cleaner.
Right. But I do think it might provide those that official and that linesman that's not on the ice just a different vantage point, and they might be looking at different things, and they might see things that they otherwise wouldn't have noticed. I'd like to see it tested out.
I like how Rod Brindamore said, put them in the penalty box. Yeah. Put them in that area. Then they can keep their skates on for all I care.
Give them a screen, too, if they, you know.
It could work out. You know, you can say the eye on the sky. Well, now you have it right at that level. All right, I've got one more, and it's got to do with changing the playing surface in a way.
Okay.
You know I hate the trapezoid, so I've been on my – for anybody who's ever listened to any episode of Kane's Cast where we talk about rules change or things that you would do to change the game, I would absolutely get rid of the trapezoid tomorrow, because everybody thinks, oh, no, the goalies are too good, and it's an extra defenseman, and it leads to less offense. I go the other way around. I want goalies who think they're good at handling the puck to come out to try to handle the puck and come out and try to handle the puck and then mess it up, and then it leads to goals.
So you're in favor of chaos.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've already gone down this the past few weeks. But isn't it great when you see somebody, a goalie, come out when it's not your team, and he's trying to make a play, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, no, I don't have as much time to make this play.
Yep.
And he goes into the corner. Quickly. He loses the puck, and now you got an empty net. You'll see goals. Yep. You'll see a few more goals. As a matter of fact, I think you'll see more offense if you let these goalies, especially the guys who think they're great at it, go out and try to handle the puck. So that's not the rule I'm saying.
But you would get rid of the trapezoid.
I got to throw it in there. I would move the blue lines. And I would move the blue lines and make the neutral zone wider. I would move the blue lines
back to the pre-lockout.
Exactly. I would move the blue lines closer to the net. 1 foot on each side. If you want to, you can move. Remember, the nets moved out a couple of years ago, too, to give more room behind the net. You can move the net back a little bit more if you want to. You know, 6 inches, 4 inches, whatever. I'm neither here nor there. Now, I understand it's going to make the offensive zone a little bit more crowded. I do get that. But at the same time, I think you're going to open up the game, especially seeing you took out the red line. You're going to have more space to pick up speed and enter the offensive zone. I think you're going to see fewer offsides, or you have the potential of seeing fewer offsides. You can make more plays in the middle of the ice. The middle of the ice becomes even more important than what it is right now. And you can't clog up the middle as easily as you can. I mean, the offensive zones are already clogged up, Michael. You watch it. Everybody gets in front of every shot anyway.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not so sure I'd like to make them smaller. I think I like the size of them.
Make an extra pass instead of trying to throw it out to the point and bomb one through that doesn't get through 90% of the time. Now you got to make a pass and work the puck down low and work the puck to the net.
I think I like the bigger offensive zones.
Okay.
I'm going to go against that one.
That's fine. I mean, not all of these are gold. Just putting them out there.
A smaller offensive zone, it would make power plays tougher. And the Hurricanes don't need that right now.
Will it really?
I think so.
Because I think you can get the puck to the net better. Instead of relying on we're going to bomb it from the point.
But there's less room to work with as it is. So there's less space. You're more confined space-wise. If you have room to move, you can at least, in theory, be able to work the puck around and find those open areas.
Well, it's 5-on-4. You should find the open area without it.
It's true.
So, and
got to outwork the opposition.
That's it. Got to outwork. That's what it all comes down to on the power play.
Yeah.
Can be the size of a shoebox, Michael.
You have to win the day.
Exactly.
Go 1-0.
Go 1-0. Win the day. Win right now.
I assume Bill Burniston has already won the day.
Absolutely.
It's not even lunchtime yet. Well, it's coming. It's close. Close.
One game at a time, one shift at a time, one play at a time.
Should we get into some fan rule proposal changes?
Well, I would ask if you had one because you knew I wanted to do this, but much like it, keep it, I know you probably don't have a rule change for me.
Well, some fans touched on some interesting ones. Like TDW at West TD919 says get rid of the shootout if it's still tied at the end of 3-on-3 overtime. The game is over and both teams get 1 point. Eliminate getting an extra point for winning a skills contest after a hockey game.
100% agree.
I like having a winner and a loser, but I think the easy solution to that is to just go to the 3-point system and then knock a shootout win down to 2 points. You could even knock 3-on-3 overtime down to 2 points if you're so keen to doing that. That at least preserves the winner and the loser. You still don't have ties, but it places less emphasis on winning a shootout versus winning a hockey game.
I like TDW with this one.
Yeah,
I really do.
I don't like ties.
I don't like the magic show at the end of the game. I just don't. I hate the skills competition. If an NBA game said now we're gonna have a 3-point
contest,
but
it's completely different.
We're going to have a 3-point contest. We're going to have a home run hitting contest.
It's completely different because in the NBA, you can very rarely do overtimes go past one overtime.
No, I understand that. Well, the NFL, they've tried to do everything to make it better and everybody get the opportunity to win the game. They never sat back and said, we're going to make it a field goal kicking contest.
Right, but again, they very rarely have ties. The NHL, when there were ties, there were...
Well, the NFL rarely had ties because if you got the ball first and got to the 40-yard line and kicked a field goal,
correct,
the game was over because it was one possession. That's why you rarely got them. Now you have two possessions.
You still rarely get them. You have maybe one or two a season, maybe.
Yeah, well, you used to have none because it was first off, but I never wanted to see overtime ended on a field goal to begin with. But believe me, I saw my fair share of the team that won the coin toss. Basically, NFL overtime became win the coin toss, win the game.
Yeah.
That's not fair. And I know I just said fair, and life isn't fair, folks. And
it's
for those of you new to the Canes cast, sorry for that rude awakening for you. But you'll find out life's not fair. In this situation, you have some teams that are built for shootouts and other teams that are built to win regulation hockey games.
I mean, I think every team should. If you're a good hockey team, you have three players who can score goals.
Sure.
Now, scoring goals doesn't always lead to shootout prowess.
There are a lot of guys who are great goal scorers who are not great on the shootout.
Look at Sebastian Aho's numbers. Look at Jeff Skinner's numbers when he was here. Look at Eric Staal's numbers.
I think I always get duped by this, but I don't think Alex Ovechkin's numbers in the shootout are all that great.
I don't think so either.
So
wow. Somebody
but
can
I
check
say
that, but I don't
know. I say that, and then I look at it, and he's like, 98% or something crazy like that. I'll look right now. We'll get our best people on it, efforting that.
I'm not a fan of ties, and they would happen way too often in. I mean, you go back and look at the standings from 2003-2004. I couldn't tell you how many ties there were, but there were probably quite a few.
But what kills me is, and you said the three-point system, the magic point that falls from the ceiling because we go to overtime.
Well, it's
a game for 60 minutes is only worth 2 points.
Right. And so the three-point system accomplishes all of these things. It gets rid of the magical point. It still rewards winning in regulation over winning in overtime or a shootout, and it still awards a clear winner and a clear loser. That's where I think you have these certain qualms about the standings or about the way a game finishes. That sort of takes care of all of them in a nice, neat little package.
Alex Ovechkin has, in his career, attempted 74 shootouts. He has made 24 and he's missed 50 of them.
Yeah.
That's 32%.
That's pretty good.
That is.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But you know how many he took last year? 4.
Did
so it doesn't take a lot of them.
Did he make any of them last year?
He went 2-2.
Oh, that's pretty good.
1 year, this is really stumming off of a year where 2013-14 he had 17 opportunities. He made 2 and missed 15. So, even the best goal scorer in the world, you know, just throwing that out there.
I think if the shootout were to change any, I'd like to see a couple extra shooters per side, make it a 5-person shootout.
Man, fine.
But I like it as a way to decide a regular season hockey game.
You just hate ties. Leave it at that.
I don't like ties. And I don't like. Like if you're paying to come see a hockey game, you're paying a decent sum of money. You probably want to have a final result. You don't want to.
You get a final result. It's just not a win or a loss.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't. I don't like it. I like having a winner and a loser.
Honestly, you know what this is, and we don't explore this enough with the dynamic between me and you on the podcast. This was somebody where for me, I grew up with ties, so they never bothered me.
Yeah.
You didn't grow up with them. For the most part, you didn't grow up with them.
For a few years, yeah.
Yeah, but was it something?
I saw a few ties, actually, and it was terrible.
I saw some ties, and they were great.
I would have rather it been it's a game, and in games you have a winner and you have a loser. So.
Then you'll never watch soccer.
I don't, except for the World Cup. And when it, I don't know. World Cup is basically when I watch.
Soccer fans, that's at.
Sorry, soccer fans.
At M. Smith, Canes.
But that's another sport where it's hard to score goals, so they decide games with shootouts.
Yeah, and people lose their mind over it, that it comes down to it.
And I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
All right.
Because you do have, when you're settling games in a certain way, you have to figure out a way to do it efficiently. And a shootout is efficient. I wouldn't be opposed to adding an additional overtime period, maybe. I maybe do a 4-on-4 and then a 3-on-3.
I don't think the NHLPA will agree to
not a
tacking on 5 more minutes of play.
Yeah, not a chance.
And I don't think the trainers would like that, and I don't even know if the coaches would like that much. I get your, hey, I want a victor, I want to see this, but the easier solution is what you just said.
Three-point system.
Yeah, that's it. In the league, my favorite answer was, it ruins the sanctity of the record book. And that's sanctimonious. I was going for that, too. I'm like, you've already done that by having a magic point fall from the ceiling when you get to overtime.
Yeah, we're increasing the number of games you play and et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera. Buzz Mongold, would the NHL ever look into using goal line technology where you can put a sensor in the puck in the goal line to sync when the puck is crossed the line completely? Also, could they do the same thing for offsides? Maybe something in the player's skate. They are tinkering with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how close the technology is, but I'm always impressed by what tennis does with the ball and in and out technology that they have. And I'm pretty sure soccer has done it in the World Cup, too, with the ball and the goal line. So I wonder, you know, and maybe it's a – I'm sure, you know, the when Fox had the Fox tracks and everything with the puck, those pucks were extremely expensive. So if one like flew into the stands, they would have to go retrieve it. They didn't want people keeping them because they were so expensive. The pucks they use now are, you know, they're not that expensive. So if they fly out and somebody catches it, great, it's a souvenir. I would assume that putting technology like this in a puck would make it more expensive. But technology always gets cheaper the more readily available it is. So hopefully something like that happens. I feel like it would make reviews a lot easier because you would be able to go to this chip and it would tell you whether the puck was over the goal line or not.
So that's that.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
Another question from Matt. Got a CanesCast question for you guys. With the signing of Ryan Dezingel, does this mean there's a smaller chance for Williams to return, or was this more of an opportunity signing? The two, I would say, are completely unrelated. So I guess if to your question, it was an opportunity that the Hurricanes had to sign a speedy, quick scoring finisher, and they took it and signed Ryan Dezingel. I don't think it impacts Williams' decision one way or the other. If anything, I think it shows Justin Williams that the Hurricanes are committed to improving their team, and maybe it influences his decision to come back. But it doesn't mean, just because the Hurricanes signed Dezingel, it doesn't mean one way or the other that Williams is going to return.
So that's how I looked at it.
Yeah,
and I'll continue to look at it the exact same way too. If anything, if I'm Justin Williams, I'm looking at this team and they're getting better. So mm-hmm. Yeah, for me it would be more of I'd want to come back if I was Justin Williams. But again, it's ultimately his decision.
Yeah, one more from Hannah Martin, wanting to hear your take on a potential rivalry brewing between the Habs and the Canes. Both teams have a good prospect pool and bright futures ahead, plus the offer sheet and, of course, an opening night matchup. Thoughts?
No.
Yeah, I don't.
No.
The offer sheet, and we mentioned this a couple podcasts ago, doesn't really affect the players on the ice.
Nope.
Now, maybe there's this rivalry amongst fans, and that's cool.
Sure, that's fine. If you guys want to, you know, go ahead and call Montreal Trémal, go right ahead.
But, you know, Max Domi isn't going to look to beat up Sebastian Aho just because he, you know, didn't.
Because the Canes match the offer.
Right. So it's completely separate from the players. But, yeah, I mean, maybe there's a rivalry brews at some point. I mean, if they happen to meet in the playoffs in future years.
That's where rivalries come from.
Exactly.
From the playoffs. If this year showed me there's a rivalry anywhere, it's with the Washington Capitals.
Yes.
That's where the rivalries come from for me, division and playoff games.
Yeah.
That's where rivalries come from.
There was always a little bit of that regional rivalry between the Hurricanes and Capitals, but it never got that flame in the playoffs.
Because you needed the playoffs.
Correct.
And one team had made it 9 consecutive seasons, and the Hurricanes did not.
Yeah, and like, when the Hurricanes were making it every few couple of years, the Capitals weren't
exactly
that great. They were sort of on the uptick of the bell curve. And finally, the two teams were able to meet, and it lived up to our expectations, I think.
Yeah, so that's just, to put it in those terms, no, I don't think there's any rivalry between Montreal and Carolina. And
not
if
yet.
You're looking for it, you're just looking for something forced. This from Will Bradshaw. What would you do if you had 24 hours with the cup and no rules? This off of the heels of some people being outraged that a dog ate out of the Stanley Cup. How dare it? There's been a lot worse things done to that thing than a dog eating out of it, folks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not at liberty to share some of the stories I know, but I can assure you a lot worse has gone on with the Stanley Cup. What would you do if you had a day with the Stanley Cup?
I don't know. I would definitely have to eat and drink out of it. It's tradition. Can make sure it's clean. You
they clean it all the time.
Yeah. Get some Windex or some high-quality cleaner.
You know, when people are talking about that, it's like, you know, so what? You only eat off of a dish once and you throw it out?
Yeah.
Trust me, that cup gets cleaned daily.
Yeah. I would just probably...
Maybe hourly.
I don't know. I would take it everywhere I went for that one day, which I assume people
do.
Take it? But maybe I would just...
Would you run the stairs with it here at PNC Arena?
Oh, that'd be
over your
too
head
hard.
It's 38 30, pounds.
Yeah, that would be difficult. I'd make it up one flight, and then I'd probably drop it.
Okay. Well,
and I wouldn't want to hurt it, so...
Well, it's already been dropped several times.
I think I would just go about a normal day, but take it everywhere. So... Just a completely normal day.
Here's Michael Smith at his desk.
And just the Stanley Cup's just sitting there. I don't know. I mean, if what, the no rules?
I don't know what that
no
means.
Money? I mean, let's fly to Hawaii and, you know, ooh, jump in the water with it.
Oh, well done.
Why not?
I like that plan.
Fiji. Whatever. Hey, let's go somewhere
drink
crazy.
The world's greatest water out of the Stanley Cup. Yeah. Fiji.
Yes.
Done. Yeah. I'd probably take it home.
Yeah. You know, take a nap with
have
it.
Have a party. Take a nap with it. Definitely you have some beverages out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it to a place where it could put some smiles on some people's faces, you know. Take it for an hour. Do the old Stanley Cups here. Come take a look at it.
Yeah.
If you got a dog, there's some food. Maybe you can eat out of it.
Yeah.
Fine with that. I don't have a dog. Got a cat.
I'll bring my dog. He can eat out of it.
You'd let Wilford eat out of it?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
I don't think he would, though.
Good for you.
He's very sometimes picky about where, I don't know. I'd put food in there and show him that he could eat it. And if he did, then great.
Would you actually physically eat it and then be like, see, it's good?
Oh, this is good food.
Because there's no rules right there. You just ate dog food out of the Stanley Cup.
I could, you know, he likes carrots. I put some carrots in there. Uh-huh. I could show him that they're good enough to eat.
You with your healthy dog. All right. That'll do it for this episode. Oh, the trip to Dallas was great.
Great.
Yeah.
Did you go to the Sixth Floor Museum?
Went to the Sixth Floor Museum because had never seen it. And it's one of those places. You and I have been there. It's just weird for me to walk around it, but was impressed with it.
Maybe the weirdest part is when they have the spot where Lee Harvey Oswald took the shot.
Oh, yeah.
And it's encased by glass, and it's kind of strange to be right there where that happened.
No, I know. And then you go out to Dealey Plaza, and there's the two X's in the middle of the road where it happened, where people run out into the middle of the road. It's still a working road. It's
still a road. There are cars.
Yeah, and they're like, and you're just like, oh, really? You have to, okay.
Fine. Yeah.
But, you know, did that, went to a Rangers game. So
yes.
That is now Major League Baseball City 29. I only have Houston, and I have seen Major League Baseball in every city.
They're getting rid of that ballpark, aren't they?
In Texas, yeah.
It's kind of strange.
Last year for Globe Life Park.
Yeah.
So
it's not that old either, is
25
it?
Years. But it's not covered.
That's true.
It's hot in Texas.
It is.
And although it was actually hotter in Raleigh this weekend than it was in Dallas.
It was so hot. I mowed my lawn on Sunday.
So hot.
Mistake.
Milk was a bad choice.
Yes, it was.
So other than that, it was great. Ate a cow. Fairly certain of that.
Entire cow?
Pecan Lodge, I had a 1-pound beef rib.
Whoa.
Was glorious.
The cow must have been big. It was big boy.
It's Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas.
That is true.
Here, this might be the first time Michael Smith is seeing the picture of the 1-pound beef rib.
From Pecan Lodge?
From Pecan Lodge.
Pecan Lodge, if you want to sponsor Cane's Cast, goodness gracious.
Yes.
That is a massive piece of meat. You're going to have to tweet that out so that people listening to this know just how big that rib is.
It's a large, beef rib.
It looks delicious, though.
It was delicious.
Might give you the meat sweats, though.
It did.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. So.
And shout out to Colleen Hamilton.
Yes, our good friend.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think she listens, but.
She does from time to time. She told me. She laughs. She goes, I laugh. I go, well, that's the whole point of this. That's what we do. All right. That'll do it for us. Dallas is really good. Found a great breakfast spot, too. Ellen's. You'll love it. And it's not that far from where we actually stay when we're there for a road trip. So maybe Michael Smith and I will give you a food review of that. But that'll do it for now for The Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We'll be back next Tuesday because I'm taking another Friday, Monday vacation.
With Ryan DeZingle.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
No, I'm not taking a vacation with Ryan DeZingle.
No. We'll talk to him.
Yes.
Okay.
Now.
Bye.
Thank you.